There are many who prey on the innocent. I'm sure your kind would agree.
If I didn't know better, I'd say you were making a threat.
Well, do you?
Do I what?
No better.
Maleficent has cursed the king!
Well, well.
Maleficent, Mistress of Evil.
And welcome to Unloved Sequels, the podcast that brings you a blow-by-blow critique of Hollywood's worst-rated sequels. You know, the ones that some people think should never have been made. We're your hosts. Michael, say hello.
Hello.
And I'm Claire. In this episode, we're pondering the nature of true love itself, while simultaneously resisting the urge to curse every small child we've come across. But maybe that's only because I've just got back from taking my own kids to a birthday party. Michael, what's the movie?
Well, Claire, we're heading back to the Disney vault to break out a classic Disney villain so she can face off with her right old Karen. This is Maleficent, Mistress of Evil.
Hey!
Yay! Now, guys, when we planned to record this one, when I first met Claire, Claire's a massive Maleficent fan.
No, actual Maleficent. I do you know what? Because it's so bloody hot in the UK at the moment, I don't have a hot drink. I had fully intended to come to this Zoom with my hot drink in my gorgeous Maleficent mug that I bought when we were in Disneyland in 2007, was it, that we went to Florida?
Yeah,
nearly
20
years ago. And I got the most amazing, gigantic Maleficent coffee or tea mug. I love it so much, even though Maleficent's spelled wrong because it's from some really shonky unofficial Disney shop. some random warehouse shop that we found at the side of the road. Not a real Disney shop.
I remember.
But yes, I love Maleficent. Big, big, big fan.
She is. So it was quite exciting to see this because before this recording, Claire had not seen this movie. She had seen the original Maleficent movie, but not the sequel. So it was quite fun going into this because Claire was experiencing it for the first time. So, Maleficent, Mistress of Evil. And I'm just going to state now that I will either call this film Mistress of Evil or Maleficent 2 for the rest of recordings because I can't keep saying that long title.
Too much to get your mouth around.
Yes. That's what she said.
Ah.
Oh, he said. Whatever your favorite.
Wow. We're already there.
Oh, I've had no sleep. Okay. Maleficent, Mistress of Evil opened on October the 18th, 2019. It went on to gross $491.7 million against a budget of $185
million.
Oh. So it made a profit. Well, it didn't really.
That's quite good.
Well,
is it?
Let me carry on. Initially projected to make about $45 million domestically, that's America only, on opening weekend, the movie instead opened on an estimated 36 million domestic ticket sales. So it's 10 million less than projected. And that's quite a big kick in the pooch.
Yeah.
Mistress of Evil posted the biggest launch in China with 22.4 million, making it a 15% increase in ticket sales from the original's opening weekend. So as much as it didn't perform well in England, it looked hopeful for other parts of the world. What basically was the... Well, the original movie had probably gained some steam. This did come out before Disney Plus was released.
Yeah.
But this is in the but, and this is where shit happens. The following weekend, it had a 60% drop off from the previous week worldwide. Now, previously, I've always learned that about 30% is a good hold on for a week, or between 30 and 40. At the moment, post-COVID, it's about 40%. But usually 40% is usually seen as a really good stronghold. So 60% drop is a big kick. It was estimated the film needed to gross between 400 and 475 million worldwide to break even. So to take in profit, to take in marketing, to take in budget and all the merch making and all the merch design and things like that. And around 500 million to turn a profit. It didn't turn a profit. It was just shy of that. So
okay, so then that, yes, I get it now.
So looking at it on paper, you would think, oh, this has done quite well. This has made some money. But
yeah, but when you factor everything else in.
It hasn't.
Yes.
So the first, to give you a bit more of a broader insight to the movie, the first movie was released on May the 30th, 2014. So it was more of a summer release. Mm-hmm. This went for more of a Halloween-y. The first movie took $758.5 million against a budget of $180 million.
Right.
So that profit of $300 million has gone.
So that puts a bit of perspective on the figures for the sequel. Yes. Yeah. I see the issue now.
Yes. But according to Wikipedia, the budget sometimes raises to about 263, reading what website you look at. I don't think it was that high, even with looking at kind of like reshoots. I had to do a couple of reshoots on the original movie because Disney wasn't quite happy with it. But I still don't think that budget of 263, if they're looking at that including marketing, maybe. Yeah. I can believe that. But if they're looking at just kind of like higher pre-production, production, I don't think it was that high. Maleficent, Mistress of Evil, ended at number 14 at the end of year worldwide box office.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, that, you know, was it this? So this was 2019. This was pre-COVID by about 3 months. This came out.
Yes.
This was the last successful year of Hollywood before COVID hit and changed the outlook of streaming and movie theaters and what the experience we receive today. So I'm going to give you Claire's favorite part of the podcast. What is the top 10 movies of the year?
The bit that I don't have to do any research for.
Yes, that bit. Yeah. Okay. So at number 10, going downwards, we have Jumanji, The Next Level. Number 9, Aladdin, the live action remake. Number 8 is Toy Story 4. Number 7 is Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker. Number 6 was The Joker. Number 5 was Captain Marvel. Number 4, Spider-Man Far From Home. Number 3, Frozen 2. Number 2, The Lion King live action. And number 1 was Avengers Endgame. That's quite a big, punchy top 10.
It is. But again, we've had this before with charts, I think, for other years. I don't think it's when this same year's come around again. Not a single original property on that list.
No, not one. The most original thing
they're
on
all
this
like
list,
the remakes or reboots or sequels or parts of franchises.
Yeah. The only thing I can really think of that's original film on this list, what's a sidestep, it is a well-known IP, would be The Joker, because it's not like a Batman movie. It's kind of like
No, but it's still part of an existing concept and it's still part of an existing fandom.
Yes.
Even though it's like you say, it's a sidestep from it.
It's a sidestep. It's a view on modern day masculinity, I would say, if you want to really pick it apart. All of the top 9 movies that year took over $1 billion.
So this was nowhere near that.
No. Endgame went on to, so Avengers Endgame went on to make nearly $2.8 billion. So this was a big year for Hollywood.
Mm. But not for this movie.
No. The film this was competing with in the cinemas was The Joker. The Joker came out a couple of weeks before this came out. It came out in the beginning of October. End of September. The Joker came out originally around the end of September. Now, listen, as a character, from my perspective and the way these movies are made, are trying to appeal to that teen who are into sci-fi and Harry Potter, to all the way up to 30 to 40-year-olds who kind of like the character from growing up with the Sleeping Beauty cartoon. And I think this just fed into how big the Joker was. Because I think that was a sleeper hit and no one expected it to be. And a lot of the gender that went to go and watch The Joker was very man and woman. Their numbers were equal. Everybody was watching it. Because everybody was just like, my God, have you seen it? It's such
They probably didn't think that Joker was going to be a competitor to this movie. But I can see that actually there's a lot of crossover in that audience.
Yeah, I think that's where Mistress of Evil really didn't like a pill. So like The Joker opened on the 4th of October. Then it came to home release for this movie I think Disney was hoping that it would start getting a little bit of money back, because the first movie on Blu-ray and DVD took an extra $85
million. Okay.
So that was a nice little bit of pocket change for Disney on the home release. But that was 2014. Streaming wasn't such a big thing. Disney Plus wasn't out. Disney Plus launched in November 2019, so a month after Mistress of Evil came out. So people were getting quite a lot of Disney info, a lot of Disney product available. And I've always said that I feel like Disney Plus has kind of ruined the magic of Disney. Because I remember years ago when they used to release things out of the Disney Vault, we used to get excited.
Oh, yeah.
Remastered.
Yeah, there's no moratorium anymore.
No. So I think by them putting things like the classic cartoons on Disney Plus, just to be available at our fingertip, I think that really ruined their market. And then to top it all off, after the disappointing box office in October, they decided to release the physical media of this film on January the 19th, 2020. So I was like, if a film badly performed in the movie theater, why didn't you just release it a month earlier in December and get that Christmas money?
If you're going to release it that quickly, release it sooner and get the Christmas market. Don't release it in the middle of the month where everyone's skint.
Yes.
I don't know if it works the same in America as over here, but in the UK, no one has money in January.
Especially the end of January. So the first movie home release was October. So it was coming up to Halloween and going into the Christmas market.
And Christmas. And
brilliant time for the first movie to come out. First movie, like I said, took $85 million on physical media. How much do you think Mistress of Evil took on physical media?
Well, it's going to be less.
Obviously. Otherwise,
it's going to be... Well, exactly. 40?
$23 million. That's a $60 million drop of physical media.
I thought
it
was pitching low.
No, and they've even put it... And this was... Still pre-COVID.
But is that because people knew it would be coming because Disney Plus existed by then? And they knew if they just waited a few more months, it would come into Disney Plus.
Well, I thought that. But they didn't put Maleficent on Disney Plus until May of 2020. We didn't have shutdowns until February or March that year. So the world was...
March in the UK, yeah.
Yeah. So we didn't have... COVID was still out and about in China, but it wasn't really something that had touched the shores of the Western world.
Yeah.
I think we had one or two cases. It wasn't that big. But so people didn't quite get their head around Disney Plus yet, and to have such a massive drop-off and to just make such little money, and then whoever marketed this movie from the most basic structure of scheduling it for the cinema, doing it for home media, screwed this film over. And I think that's where the disappointment happened. So the original Maleficent movie on Rotten Tomato has a critic score of 54% critics and 70% audience. With Mistress of Evil, critics 39%, audience
95%.
Ooh.
Oh.
So
that's interesting.
It's very interesting, isn't it?
But then where were those people when who are all these people that like it if no one went to see it?
Watching The Joker. Because don't forget, we're now reviewing this movie from Rotten Tomato critic scores and everything 3 years down the line.
Yeah, so that includes people who've come around to this movie way later, so wouldn't have been part of that initial figures,
so
but have come to it later because it's on Disney Plus and it's essentially free now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I feel
that's really interesting.
Yeah. So that's all my figures. I hope you found that riveting as much as I did researching. So Claire, do you have any behind the scenes stuff for me?
Well, I do have a bit. I was surprised at how hard it was to find out very much about this movie. But again, maybe it's because the marketing, maybe it just wasn't pushed enough. Maybe they didn't make enough noise and put the information out there in the first place.
Yeah.
Like even the Wikipedia entry for this movie is thin compared to the original.
Yeah.
So I don't have as much kind of production information as I would normally have, but there's quite a lot to say about the cast and creative teams. And I did find a few little snippets of stuff that I found interesting. So hopefully you will as well. But starting with the cast and creative team, obviously we've got quite a lot of returning cast in this movie. There's a lot of continuity between the two films. So we've got Angelina Jolie back as Maleficent. We've got Elle Fanning back as Aurora. We've got Sam Riley back as Diaval. We've got Juno Temple back as Thistlewit, Leslie Manville as Flittle, and Imelda Staunton as Knotgrass, the three flower pixies. In terms of new cast, the big one is that we now have Harris Dickinson playing Prince Philip, which is a recast. In the first movie, he was played by Brenton Thwaites. But when this movie was being made, he had scheduling conflicts with Titans that he was already working on. And so they recast Prince Philip. I'm not sure I noticed.
I did because I have a
But I think that says more about the character. This is not a slight against either of the actors. And I will tell you more later when we talk about the movie about what I think of the character of Prince Philip. But they obviously decided that it was more important to press ahead with the movie with whoever playing that character than it was to try and get the same actor back.
Yes.
We then have a fairly extensive new cast, because the thing about this movie compared to the first one is that the world is much, much bigger. We see a lot more of the world that these characters live in. So we have Michelle Pfeiffer coming in as Queen Ingrith, Chiwetel Ejiofor as Connell, Ed Skrein coming in as Borra, Robert Lindsay as King John, David Jesse as Percival, Jen Murray as Gerda, and Warwick Davies as Lickspittle. And then there's also a fairly extensive supporting cast as well. The cast of this movie is much, 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 much bigger.
Yes.
I'm going to take a brief moment now because we haven't had a tenuous connection to the movie for ages.
I've got
three tenuous connections to the movie. So my first one, which I think you will be expecting me to say, I have the tenuousest. What's the word of that? Anyway, it's so flimsy.
A very
connection to Angelina Jolie.
You did.
It's like you could blow through it and it would snap, is my connection to Angelina Jolie.
No, there is a picture of it on the internet, so it counts. You can Google that picture.
There is a picture. It was in the press and everything. There's a photograph that she is in that I am also. It is not a photograph of the two of us. It's a photograph that she is in and that I am in. Many, many years ago, when I worked at Wicked in the West End, she came with her family to see Wicked. And I was on duty that day. So I didn't get to meet her because people more important than me in the company decided that they would have that privilege. And that's absolutely fine. I didn't speak to her or any of the family, but I did, you know, they walked past me. If I'd wanted to and didn't value my job, I could have touched them, but I didn't, because that would be a very weird thing to do.
Why would you want to?
No, I know, but then just an illustration of the distance between me and them.
Well, maybe
I don't say I wanted to.
Maybe like a sniff would have been fine, but a touch, crossing boundaries.
I think sniffing is, maybe. Surely sniffing would be creepier.
Just no, gonna I don't know.
Smell Brad Pitt as he goes past.
Yeah, no, I would. Not. I would.
I
so
think that probably would have
get a whiff of Brad Pitt's pits.
Anyway, by all accounts, they were all lovely. From my colleagues that did host them more directly than I did, they were very lovely family. My second tenuous connection to the movie is getting less tenuous as we get closer to number three. Number two is Chiwetel Ejiofor. He was in a show when I worked at the Young Vic. Like, again, we never particularly got to know one another, but he did at least recognise me in the corridor. He knew who I was and vice versa. So that's my second connection. My third connection is that David Jesse was at university with me. He was a year or two below me, although I think he's the same age as me. I think he took a year or two out. So he was in the year below or the year below that, I think. Maybe he was in his first year when I was in my third year. But he probably wouldn't look back at me and go, oh, yeah, I remember her. But I remember him because he was fantastically talented then.
He's the one who played Prince Philip.
No. Who he's the one that was Queen Ingrith's sort of henchman. Type guy, his guard, the guard.
Oh, the guard. Right, cool. Yep.
Yeah. So he was in the movie quite a lot. He wasn't Prince Philip. No. I mean, he's not my age. I'm old.
Yeah, but I don't know. You said 3 years younger, so that would make him like...
No, like I think David Jesse is my age, but I think that would not make him 25.
In my mind.
Thank you, but no.
No, we're not.
So my third tenuous connection is that I did actually know David Jesse for a little while. We did socialise a couple of times. We knew each other's names. We haven't kept in touch, so it's still fairly tenuous.
Anyway. It's so nice to see when people you went to college were successful in what you studied. Just putting that out there.
Because I'm not, you mean?
No.
Hands down. David Jesse's done quite a lot actually since we graduated, and I always like to see him doing well because he was heads and shoulders more talented than me and a lot of people in our university. Yeah. So it does make me happy when I see the likes of him and a couple of other people that I went to university with, I see doing really well. And I think good for you, because it's a hard industry to start out in and to get your foot in the door. And I never even got that far. So
yeah,
fair play to that. And obviously, you know, I don't have half the talent that David Jesse has. So I don't feel like, oh, how come it's you and not me? But it's him and not me, because he's better than me and he's worked really hard for it. And yeah, fair play to him, because he has done very well. Little comments.
No, it's fun. I've seen you perform. You're very talented.
I'm pretty sure you've been in a show more recently than I have.
Let's move on. Anyway, Claire.
Should we talk about the movie? Yeah, so the movie is directed by Joaquin Running, who he's done a few bits, but most notably Pirates of the Caribbean, Salazar's Revenge, which is a movie I believe I have not seen. I've seen some of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. I think my interest in them had kind of dropped off by the time we got to Salazar's Revenge. Yeah.
Is that the last one?
We should cover
Pirates of the Caribbean, because they, like, some of them I actually really like Stranger Tides. That's one by Rob Marshall that took over a billion. It was really good. But most people hate that one, so that might be a good one to cover. Anyway, carry on.
We'll look at that.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't direct that one. He directed Salazar's Revenge. But this, Mistress of Evil, is the first film that he has worked on without his usual collaborator. He quite often works with Espen Sandberg as co-director. This is the first movie that he made without Espen Sandberg. So that's quite notable.
Yeah.
The movie is written by Linda Wolverton, who did the screenplay for Maleficent as well. So there's continuity from the previous movie. She also wrote The Lion King, the animated 94 version, Beauty and the Beast in 91. I mean, I say she wrote, I don't think this was a single-handed effort, but she was in the writing team for both of those movies. She did the screenplay for Alice in Wonderland, and she has a written by credit for Alice Through the Looking Glass. She also has, based on the original screenplay, by credits for the live action remakes of Lion King and Beauty and the Beast. I don't believe she worked directly on the scripts for them, but because they were adaptations of her previous scripts, she has credits on those too.
Alice Through the Looking Glass. That's another one we should cover, but be really stoned.
Are you writing all this down?
Yeah, I'm writing all this trash down.
Also, writing team on this movie was Noah Harpster and Mika Fitzsimon Blue, who, from what I can see looking at their credits, seem to work as a partnership, because they both wrote on A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood and various other bits of things. And they're both working on the upcoming Bambi remake.
I think when I
looked on IMDb, it said Bambi brackets in production brackets 2023. Now we're here in September 2023.
Yeah, but all the strikes,
nobody's
are going
come
on.
Out with yeah. So I don't think we're going to see that movie soon, but it might happen. But if it does, they're working on it.
What's going to happen in the modern day woke version? Does Bambi mum just slip and hit her head on a rock and slips into a nice coma for the length of the movie and wakes up at the end?
Who knows? But Disney clearly think they're onto a thing with these remakes.
Oh, God, no.
Whether they are or not, we'll leave up to our listeners. Yes. The music on this movie is by Jeff Zanelli, who also did music on Christopher Robin and also Pirates of the Caribbean, Salazar's Revenge. So there's a connection.
I see a connection.
He also did additional music on previous Pirates of the Caribbean movies and on Angels and Demons, Catwoman, mm-hmm. Pearl Harbor, Chicken Run, Hannibal. He's got quite an extensive CV of work.
Catalog, yeah.
Interesting little tidbit of Disney movie trivia for you. I've got a pop quiz. You do this to me loads, so I'm doing it to you.
Okay, so I'm ready.
This should be a very easy one. If you get it wrong, we're in big trouble. This is the second sequel to a Disney live-action adaptation of an animated film not to have its music score composed by the same composer as its predecessor.
Yeah.
Name the first.
102 Dalmatians in the sequels.
Yes, thank goodness.
Obviously done by David Newman.
You'd have been embarrassed, wouldn't you, if you hadn't got that one.
I would. So, yeah, he likes
that.
That
was a nice
little
bit of trivia, though, considering that we are now consider David Newman friend of the show.
Yes, we do. I spoke to him the other day. Absolutely. Great day.
Yes. If you didn't listen to our episodes on the Flintstones in Viva Rock Vegas, which has an interview with David Newman, friend of the show, have a listen. He did the music on that.
Yeah, he did.
There we go. Let's get a plug in. On to the movie.
Yes.
So like I said, there's not a great deal of information there about the production itself, but I have got a little bit of timeline. So the original movie, as you said, came out in 2014. And as early as June 2014, Angelina Jolie was making hints about the possibility of a sequel coming to be. By June 2015, Disney had announced the sequel. They'd announced that Linda Wolverton was returning to write the screenplay and that Joe Roth was going to produce. By April 2016, so almost a year after that, it was confirmed that Angelina Jolie would be reprising her role as Maleficent. I don't think there was ever a suggestion that they would make the movie without her, though. I don't think that could really, like, she is so,
she's embedded
such an embodiment
character.
Of this version of the character.
Yes.
I think they would never have been able to recast.
I'm glad you got in on this embodiment of the character.
Yes. I mean, this is her version of Maleficent very much. Yes. And if they were going to make another Maleficent movie without her, it would have to be another reboot.
Yes,
I think. Definitely. I don't think you could recast this Maleficent with anyone other than Angelina Jolie.
Mm-hmm.
So by October 2017, they were in talks with Waking Running about directing. By April 2018, Michelle Pfeiffer was in talks about being in the movie. By May 2018, the movie went into official filming and principal photography concluded on August the 24th, 2018.
Mm-hmm.
March 2019, they released the first teaser poster featuring Maleficent, and they announced a new release date for the film. They pulled the release date to, as you said, October 2019. Originally, this movie had been scheduled to open in May 2020.
Well, it's good they didn't do that, because that would have made it bomb even more.
So if you think it tanked in October 2019, if they'd held out till May 2020, it would have been a lot worse.
Yes, it
was. So
would.
I think
COVID,
it definitely dodged a bullet.
But they had COVID to hide behind. If it underperformed, they could have gone it underperformed because of COVID.
Well, they wouldn't have released it in May 2020.
Oh, I don't know.
May 2020. No, were they releasing movies in
they
the theaters?
Weren't, but
over
what
here,
they
weren't.
No, they weren't. But what they were doing was holding back movies each month. They go, it's going to come out. No, it's going to come out. Like they did with Black Widow. I think that came out like nearly every month. In the end, came out in September. With also a streaming premium price for Disney Plus, didn't it? So that's what probably
which then cost them a fortune because they had to give a load of money to Scarlett Johansson.
They did.
For not giving it an exclusive theatrical release. So there have been rumours about a third Maleficent movie. And they've been knocking around for a while. It's been a couple of years. Apparently there's a first draft of the script already, again reported written by Linda Wolverton. Angelina Jolie's been dropping hints about it, but this is like 2 years ago now and there's still no confirmation. Yeah. I think if it was going to happen, they'd be making noise. I mean, Angelina Jolie doesn't really act anymore, but then she wasn't before this movie either. This was very much a kind of...
Well, I don't know. She was in the...
Almost for her.
But she was... she'd done Eternals for Marvel.
Yes, she did do Eternals a couple of years ago.
I think she's not now.
Well, I suppose she's in a position to be, isn't she? She can pick and choose the project she wants to work on. And if you can do that, then why wouldn't you, I suppose? apparently, when he was visualizing the film, the director, Wickham Running, pictured the big, you know, the big battle scene at the end. He kind of visualized that it is a very much as a World War II style battle scene.
Yes.
With the red bombs being reminiscent of the sort of bombs that were used then, which I think makes a lot of sense, and particularly in the context of the wider movie, which I think we might talk about a little bit in a while. But I found that quite interesting when I saw that was what he had in mind, because I think that did come across in the movie and links in with other things that are going on in the movie at that point. One other little tidbit that I found while I was researching this, Imelda Staunton was filming this movie during the day and then dashing down to the West End by night because it was while she was doing Sweeney Todd, which we went to see.
We did.
So she must have been knackered, because that's...
She did. But I think
that's a big show, and then this is a big movie.
Yeah, but she wasn't on set for this. She was just motion captured. So it would have been kind
but
of like...
Physically, though, that's still quite demanding.
Yeah, I don't think they would have put her in a harness and flew her around like they did, probably. I think they probably just motion captured her face and then got somebody else to fly around. They just shoved her face on the person. They play a smaller part in the sequel.
Yes, they do play a much smaller part in the sequel. I've got a few alternative castings that I found quite interesting. I'm assuming, because I found this piece of information as a single sentence, that this was as a combination rather than just individually. But Tara Reid, Emma Thompson and Judi Dench were in consideration for the roles of the three flower pixies.
Say that list again.
Tara Reid, Emma Thompson and Judi Dench. So Tara Reid would have been the Juno Temple character.
Thank fuck.
And I guess Emma Thompson would have been Leslie Manville and Judi Dench would have been Imelda Staunton.
I'm guessing. What it's me is, they're supposed to be three sisters, and I don't quite understand the age gap between them, because
no, well, I think we just chalk that up to them being magical, maybe. What, I mean, in the original animation,
the three
ladies are very similar aged. I don't know if they're supposed to be sisters in the original, but they are all of an age. They are not... I mean, Leslie Manville and Imelda Staunton aren't too far apart in age, but Juno Temple is a lot younger.
Yeah, a lot younger.
Yeah. Apparently, and I can't work out if I would have loved this or hated it. I think it may be on the side of hating it. Producers were toying with the idea of trying to get Bette Midler, Sarah Jessica Parker and Kathy Najimy in to play the three flower pixies.
Oh my God. I would have loved that. I would have loved that, because it would just been...
I mean, that might have just been a 3 a.m. meeting and someone went, oh my God, wouldn't this be amazing?
Somebody really high... really high gay person who pushes an admin trolley. I've got a great idea.
I know who you should cast.
Yeah, exactly.
But bearing in mind, this is before Hocus Pocus 2 was a thing. So obviously now, knowing that Hocus Pocus 2 came to fruition, I don't think it would work. But if it had been, if Hocus Pocus was completely put to bed, it would have been a nice little treat, I suppose, for the Hocus Pocus fans.
And now we have the drop news that Hocus Pocus 3 is in production, coming soon to an episode near you, probably.
Ooh, we'll see. I'm not getting excited about any announcements.
No, not
well at the moment. Nothing's being written and made anyway, so
no, exactly,
we'll see. Apparently Lindsay Lohan auditioned for the role of Thistletwit but turned it down, which would suggest she didn't only audition but was offered it. I'm not sure how that would work. I love Juno Temple in that role, actually. I really like her.
I think she's a really good balance for the other two. I think she's a good casting.
And Kristen Stewart was considered for the role of Aurora.
Oh, did they not see the Snow... What, those Snow Whites and the Huntsmen's movies?
Well...
She's such a bore fest.
Maybe they did, and that's why they didn't.
Do you know what the film I...
Not
really
for this sort of movie, though.
No. But you know what, who I really, really... I didn't like her in Snow White and the Huntsman. I find her really kind of like two-dimensional. I really like... There are a few movies I really like her in, but one movie that I really thought she was really great in was the Charlie's Angels remake with Elizabeth Banks writing, directing. I thought she did a great job in that.
Yeah.
I thought it was like, she was a bit more fluid and gave a modern-day twist on Charlie's Angels. So I quite liked her in that movie.
But I don't think it would have worked. I can't see her as Aurora in
that. No, not at all.
So that's all I have. in terms of information on the movie. So what do you think of it? What, so you had seen this movie before
I put it on the list movie of
movies
theater.
To cover for this.
I saw it in the movie theatre. I went in. I think I went in to go and watch it with great, not much hope, because I wasn't a massive fan of the first one. Because I was a bit kind of, when I watched the first
one. So why did you go and see it? Just for the sake of seeing it?
Yeah, well, I liked the new first one. I just didn't like what they did with the character. I was a little bit kind of like, because the first one's a retelling of the cartoon, but through different eyes.
Mm.
And it's supposed to say kind of like the cartoon is the story and the whispers that we got spread around by a character in this movie. And the movie is actually what happened. I just watched the sequel because I was because I really liked Jolie as Maleficent. I thought she was great. I just thought the film wasn't where it should be. So I went into the sequel thinking, what is this going to be like? And I was pleasantly surprised. I really thought it was a great movie. I really enjoyed the world building in this one far more than I enjoyed the world building in the first one.
Yeah.
I loved. Are we going to do dislikes and likes now then? I take it we're just going to go into.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, let's start off with, should we do likes or dislikes first of all?
Well, on my list, I have what I like first and what I don't like after, but you...
Let's go
whatever
for
you feel, whatever you feel like you need to say, get it off your chest.
Let's start off with a positive light and end with what I did. Because my likes are quite, there's quite a lot of likes in this. Love Michelle Pfeiffer in this.
Yes.
Love
full
her.
Marks for Michelle Pfeiffer. Absolutely with you on that.
Michelle Pfeiffer playing a 15th century. 15th century, would you say this is period? I know it's a mysterious land, but I don't know. But kind of like her period of a Karen. It was just Karen-esque. It was like, I don't like them because I don't like them and they're foreign looking and I don't like them. Build a wall, you know. I want to take over everything for no reason. It was a Karen performance and I thought she did a fantastic role. And you don't really get to see Michelle Pfeiffer with her fangs sharpened like she did in this movie. And she's absolutely glorious. Her and Jolie's screen time. Can we just stop and pause about that? Like, if you could, I was up when the Golden Globes got nominated. I was actually very surprised that Michelle Pfeiffer wasn't nominated for like comedy and drama for the performance, because I just like, I thought she did a great job. And, you know, I think it was such a sidestep for her. Somebody else I really liked in the role, Jen Murray as Grinda.
Yes.
She was fantastic as well. For a silent role with a very few lines. She was amazing when she was in that organ and she's like, she's amazing.
And she pitched it just right because she had just enough panto villain in her. She made the part bigger than it could have been. It could have been a very much a background, just henchman lackey part. And she made it through her performance a lot more than that without it being like she's trying to steal the scenes. She knew her place in this film. And I think she pitched it really well.
Yeah, you walk out of this movie and she's one of the people on your mind, even though she's got such a small part. But the scene she's in, she really does still just kind of like the stern look. And I would have liked to see more screen time of her and Michelle Pfeiffer. I wonder if it ended up on the cutting room floor, because you never really saw them plotting together, because they must have been behind the scenes plotting. Film gave me very big Return to Oz vibes with like the mannequin scenes and stuff going into the costumes. And I love that. Dark side, like Disney
not
fantasy.
Quite as creepy as Return to Oz, thank God.
No, the set pieces in this film are amazing. The castle looks great. I think the thing with the sequel is, I think it went bigger, it went grander, it gave us a lot more than I was expecting from it compared to the first movie. And I think that's where I think the audience scores from Rotten Tomatoes come in. I think this film does pack a bigger punch than the original movie does. I think like if you're going to readdress and redo a story, the fight scene at the end of this and introducing kind of like the fairies that are Maleficent's own breed and just building on that and having the whole cast of them come in with loads of famous faces there as well. Absolutely amazing. I would love to see a spin-off of that, kind of like how things are appearing afterwards. I really liked it. I really liked a lot of what this new director brought to the table. What did you like about it?
Yes, I agree. I think everything you said, I agree with. Michelle Pfeiffer absolutely brings it and is the perfect foil for Angelina Jolie. And again, the balance is bang on, because she brings it to Angelina Jolie's level. She does not let herself get overpowered by Maleficent as a character. No. But she also knows not to try and push it over and take over the movie herself. It's they're very well matched, the two of them.
She knows
together.
It's Angelina Jolie's vehicle and she's along for the ride, but she's right on her hip. That their chemistry was
absolutely
palpable. I loved it.
Absolutely. I think the movie is visually stunning.
Yeah.
There's so much to see in this movie and it all looks really good. The effects are well done. I loved the little nod at the end of the movie. It's a tiny detail, but it as someone who is a huge fan of the original animated movie, the whole thing of the pixies making her dress change color at the end was very sweet. And then the fact that they let it settle on blue, which gives you that little bit of hope Flittle might not be completely gone. And also acknowledges the fact that in the original movie, it was make it pink, make it blue, not make it pink, make it green. It wasn't the green fairy that was involved in that battle of which colour should the dress be. It was the pink and blue. So the fact that they were, make it pink, make it green, make it pink, make it green. And then it ends up blue and they go, okay, yes, we'll leave it on that. That
for me,
made the little girl version of me very happy.
I felt that came across a lot better than them offering that really pathetic cake in the first movie that was supposed to be the big grand cake. Like, I'm so upset they cut the cake scene out of the original movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, the cake in the first movie is iconic. There are tutorials on the internet of how to make that really crappy looking the wonky Sleeping Beauty cake that's propped up with the candles sliding down the broomstick. There's online tutorials of how to make
I'm home
cake
for my birthday
like
next year, you know.
So, you know, you want me to make you a Sleeping Beauty cake, crappy wonky Sleeping Beauty cake. We'll see. I think this movie, now I don't know if this movie was ever setting out to be a feminist movie, or the first one, but looking at it from the feminist angle, I think this achieves much more than the first movie did. One of my big bugbears with the first movie was that although it fleshed out the female characters, it also took a lot away from all of them. Yeah. I mean, Aurora didn't have much agency in the first place, so there wasn't really anything for her to lose in that respect. But even by giving her a bigger role in the movie and by giving her more dialogue, there's still no more agency for her, particularly in Maleficent than there was in Sleeping Beauty. Maleficent herself, she's just as powerful as she was in Sleeping Beauty, but the fact that they, and I get that they had to give her a motivation for being the way she is. If you're going to explore the story from her angle, there has to be enough backstory to support that, which we don't see any of Maleficent's backstory in Sleeping Beauty because it's not her story. It's called Sleeping Beauty, not Maleficent. This movie's called Maleficent, so they need to tell her story. It's disappointing that her story then is hell hath no fury than a woman scorned.
Yes.
That is her motivation. It's all about Stefan. It's all about the boy. Yeah. And that was a disappointment for me. And it was also a disappointment for me in Maleficent that the three fairies who had really driven the plot in Sleeping Beauty were reduced to this kind of bumbling, idiotic, relief in Maleficent. I was really disappointed in the treatment of particularly those three characters in Maleficent. In Mistress of Evil, I feel like that gets redressed a little bit. We don't have much screen time for the three flower pixies, so they don't get much chance to do more. But we do see, you know, it's Flittle who ultimately saves everyone inside the church by making her sacrifice. She is the one that kind of makes that decisive action. But we see Maleficent has a lot more of herself
yeah.
in this movie. And Aurora suddenly gets agency. We see Queen Ingrith as well, a new female character. And in fact, Jen Murray's character, I've gotten the name, Gerda.
Gerda, yeah.
You know, most of the decisive action that occurs in this movie is taken by women.
Yes, 100%.
And I appreciate that. I like that that's the case in this movie, because it was sorely missing in the first one. Even Maleficent's iconic dragon transformation from the animated movie got given to Diabel
and Maleficent. That pissed me off.
You know, this was an iconic moment for this character, and they took it from her and gave it to a male character, which was really disappointing.
Yeah.
And the fact that in the second movie...
That phoenix scene, you know, tingles.
Yes, yes. That kind of balances things out a bit. It feels like a much more, not just female-led movie, but that the women in the movie have a lot more agency. And so I really liked that in this movie compared to the first one.
Yeah.
How about things that you didn't like so much then?
So there's only a few things I dislike. One of the first things I dislike, and I think it's more of a choice from the writers than Angelina Jolie, but what I really liked about Maleficent in Sleeping Beauty, the original cartoon, is she's always very calm, very collect, and she's very passive. But Angelina just seems to have her version just shoots up with anger immediately and very emotionally driven. And the original Maleficent isn't emotionally driven. And I know they're trying to bring her whole this whole, she does love and she got hurt by the boy. And I thought they're going to step away from that a little bit in this, but they didn't, because when she got rallied by Michelle Pfeiffer at the dinner table during the in-laws meeting, she easily snapped. And I was a bit like, that makes you look weak. You shouldn't have done that. And it's not, for me, Maleficent is very kind of like, very calm and very British and very...
Yes, raw. The cartoon Maleficent would have been much more in control of that scene.
She can't
control her. Angelina Jolie's Maleficent.
And I think that's something that's been lost with production and different hands on the pot, and I don't think they quite grasp that with the character, and I think that always really bothered me in both these movies. I find this movie very dark. Now, I watched this in a basement with 130...
You mean literally visually dark rather than the tone of the movie? Yeah.
Like the lighting, some of the cinematography for me was quite uncomfortable to watch. And you were watching it at the same time as I was. And I was watching it in a space that is pitch black on a 130-inch screen. And I was like, and I texted you, didn't I? I went to you, if I'm struggling with this, you must be really struggling watching this during the day in your front room on your TV.
Yes. And my reply was, yes, I am. I have no idea what's going on in some of these scenes because it's so dark.
Yeah, and I think that's a massive flaw, because especially with Disney films, because Disney films aren't supposed to be designed to be watched in that element. They're supposed to be able to watch during the day for the kids. They're supposed to be put on in the background for families to watch. They're not designed to be watched at nighttime.
Yeah.
So
this isn't a movie that should rely on being seen in the cinema.
Yes, it should be.
For it to look good.
Yes. Especially when Disney knew they were launching a home streaming service at the same time this was in production. So that should have even been taken into account when designing this movie. The other thing, and this I think is one of my other dislike, is I really struggle with this movie. And I think one of the reasons why I left the cinema after seeing the first one disappointed, the overuse of CGI. I went into the first movie hoping and praying that they had Jim Henderson come in and do some puppetry and do some kind of like animatronics, do something like Dark Crystal or do some, you know, some labyrinth kind of stuff. And they just didn't. And I was really disappointed. And I think that's a massive thing missed by this. The Moorland creatures, though that they look better in this film, they still look shit. And they're going to age, and they're going to age bad.
Yeah.
The CGI does. And I think that's when, because the detail they put into the wings and all the other fairies and kind of like the makeups, the physical makeup effects they did on the Maleficent people. I forgot what their clan's called, but
the Dark Fae,
they looked amazing. Like the Dark Fae, like the nest when they were flying through the nesting thing and they had all the tunnels and stuff, amazing. Mm-hmm. Set building, amazing. Physical makeup, amazing. Angelina Jolie's never looked better. Michelle Pfeiffer, the makeup artist on this, phenomenal. CGI, why? If they just use animatronics or blended both, it would have been so much better. You know, some of like the boggling creatures and kind of like some of the...
But it's that thing that when you spoke, sorry to go back to the Flintstones episode again, twice in one
blogging.
Episode, but when you when you spoke to Brian Levant in our other episode on Flintstones. No, but he said, didn't he, these days when you make a movie, if someone has to touch it, you build it.
Yeah.
If you don't touch it, it can be CGI'd.
Yeah.
And that's what's happened in this movie, isn't it? Rather than, as you say, with the things like Dark Crystal and Labyrinth, before CGI could do that sort of thing, you just built all of it and you just had to make it smaller if you didn't have the budget to make that many creatures.
But in this, that whole interaction with Aurora, she has that whole scene at the beginning where the hedgehog creature nicks her crown and stuff. And she's running around between the animals and stuff. They could have done both. I just think it's a massive letdown.
Yeah.
They could have done both. Like, they could have pleased. And I think if they went down the physical route of making some animatronics, I think this film would stand up with those classic movies that are still popular 30, 40 years down the line.
Yeah.
I think what's going to happen with these two movies, especially the sequel, what I feel, and I'm not giving my points now, but I feel is a better movie than the original Maleficent movie, I think the sequel is going to be forgotten about. And I think it has been even in the last 3 years.
Yeah.
And I think it's such a shame. I think if they started using a bit more physical stuff and more interaction with the creatures, like not one time did you see Angelique in the first or second Angelique pick up one of the creatures and look at it like an actual thing, because you can't interact with it because it's all CGI.
Yeah.
And I think that's where when they're in the moors, I feel like there is a disconnect between the live action actor and what's going on around them.
Yeah, I agree. Actually, it is a shame that they didn't take the opportunity.
Yeah,
to make some of that a bit more physical and a bit more practical.
Yeah, exactly. What didn't you like about the movie?
So, having said how much I enjoyed the increased prominence of the female characters in this movie, I do feel like, possibly with the exception of Diaval, the male characters, then they just went, oh, well, we've put all our energy into the women. Philip is a complete wet weekend. Like I say, I barely even noticed that it was a different actor. And I watched these movies days apart.
Yeah.
I barely even noticed that it was a different actor because he wasn't given enough to do for you to see him do anything, really. All he did in the first movie was turn up and look pretty, and he didn't do much more than that.
No, because he was
in this movie.
In this movie, he was such a fucking wet blanket.
He was
a bit like, he was like, oh no, my dad's in a deep, deep sleep. Oh, I'm just gonna hold his hand and sit by the bed. I would have been like, right, I'm now in charge. My dad's in a sleep. I'm next in the king. I'm the king. I'm gonna sort out the kingdom. But no, he just let his mother do it. And I was like, well, that wouldn't happen in real life because he would have to take over the throne immediately.
Yeah. And also the king. I mean, obviously, I see the narrative reason for putting him in the curse. And so he's out for most of the movie. But even when he's in the movie, he's not really in the movie. He's just making up numbers, really, isn't he? He's completely passive to Queen Ingrith. And that's partly because of the way Queen Ingrith is as a character. But he's completely passive to her. He gets that one line at the end that makes you think, oh, actually, there is a bit of something to him. But where's that been for the last 2 hours when he says, we'll only have her turned back into a human from a goat if we want to, suggesting we don't want to. But
I would have liked to see an actual marital domestic between the king and queen. Because I think before the wedding, I think the queen should have been like, I don't want her here. And he's like, well, we should do this for our son. Because you knew how she was plotting that. You knew she was the baddie straight away. So there was no point in hiding
on.
So they could have hinted that he was on the other side from the beginning and it was causing a rift in their relationship.
Yes, exactly. Which wouldn't have affected the narrative of the story because he then gets put under the curse anyway. So then becomes unable to act on what he feels anyway, but at least we'd have seen that he had a bit of something to his character.
I agree.
And even Lickspittle, the pixie that is doing all of her, mixing up her little potions and things for her. Obviously, I realise that she's essentially put him into captivity to do this, and he's been given a choice of do this or this is going to be your fate.
There's a scene where she's taken his wings. But yes. He has no recognition of this. And he goes, oh, did I have wings? Did I have wings?
It's a bit, there's not really enough to him. And I'm a little bit, this is nothing against him as an individual or as an actor, because I do think Warwick Davis is a very talented actor, but he is not the only talented actor of his stature.
Yes.
And surely we can have a movie that needs a short male character in it that doesn't feature Warwick Davis. He's been in so many movies. And like I said, this is not against him. Yeah, I liked him in everything I've seen him in. I don't dislike him in this movie.
But you just roll your eyes a little bit.
It's just like, oh, it's Warwick Davis. Like, there's no one else who could possibly play these roles. And that's not true.
Well, this is because of Willow management, isn't it? Let's just look at it at the baseline. He owns the biggest actors agency.
He has an agency, doesn't he?
It's the biggest in the world for small actors. So Disney go to him, Warner Brothers go to him, and they go, we want you. And instead of Hercules, he go, I appreciate you want me, but let's give somebody else a try. He doesn't. He takes the roles. He has the largest amount of small actors available to him, but he chooses to take the roles when he could turn down the roles and go, but let me find someone for you and let me get a younger actor. But he probably just sees the numbers and goes, oh, and I go, like, realistically, he's probably quite an expensive small actor as well.
Well, yes, because he's got more star power, but this movie doesn't need another name. Like, you know, there are a lot of names in this movie.
Yeah.
So it's not like you need Warwick Davis. No one's buying this movie, seeing this movie because Warwick Davis is in it.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So it doesn't have to be him. There are other actors who are as good as him. I mean, you know, it's not just this movie. There are franchises, multiple franchises, where he has played more than one character in the same universe.
Yes, no, I agree.
Which is just unnecessary. Like, he's a good actor. I have no issue with that. But it's exactly as you say. You see him on screen or in the credits and you go, oh, it's Warwick Davis again.
Yeah. We don't even need to look on credits.
And it's just a bit like...
It's Warwick Davis with a prosthetic nose on again. There he is.
Yeah.
He's always got a prosthetic nose. They just love it. They stick it on him.
Because I guess they're trying to make him not look like he was in all of the other movies that he was in. They could just hire a different actor and then it wouldn't look like him in all the other movies he's been in.
It's true.
Crazy notion. So yes, but do you know what? Generally, I really like this movie. I kind of simultaneously liked and disliked. I found it horrific, but I did find it quite powerful in this movie. I didn't mention it when we were talking about what we liked earlier, but I did hint at it earlier. The church scene. When it, you know, it's, I don't know at what point you were supposed to see what was happening. I wonder if maybe I saw it later than I was supposed to. But, you know, my ears kind of went a bit, oh, what's that? When they were saying, right, okay, like, only the magic people are going into the, only the Moors people are going into the church first. They didn't let Diaval in because he was in human form.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's a thing. And then that sudden realization, and I texted you, didn't I? Of like,
they're gonna gas
bloody hell, it's a gas chamber.
Yeah,
it's a bloody Holocaust.
Yeah, of course it was.
And the fact that they could do that, the fact that they were prepared to do that, and they did do that in a family movie.
Yeah,
I thought was really powerful. I think it was really well handled. Yeah. It does tie into that. That image that the director was going for with that whole battle scene of it being very World War II reminiscent.
Yeah.
But it just, the whole tone of the movie just changed for me in that moment. And it was, to say I liked it doesn't feel right, because obviously I don't like any situation in which we are becoming reminiscent of World War II and reminiscent of the Holocaust. But the fact that it happened, it was a really powerful moment. And the fact that they didn't shy away from it, the fact that they were prepared to push Queen Ingrid's character that far.
Well, her motto for taking over the Moorlands and saying that the people in the Moorlands have stopped them getting everything they need to survive and they stood in their way is not much more different to how Hitler felt about the Jews.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know.
And the way that you see the people around her. And again, that's where it might have been nice to see a bit of something, a bit of pushback from King John before he got cursed. But the people around her just get so swept up in everything she's saying you know, Gerda, whether she, maybe she's just of the same mentality anyway, or maybe she got caught up in all of the drama and the hyperbole. And, you know, Percival, David Jesse's character, you clearly see him going along with all of her. And he has that real moment at the end of, hang on, what have I just been a part of? What is this actually?
It's about segregation. The whole movie is about segregation and making people feel, people will always pick a side if you can make the poor, the somebody poorer, make them feel like there's somebody further below them. And we see it now in even Western.
Oh, yes. Culture. It's happened. I mean, you know, it's happening in the UK. It's happening in the USA. I guess it's probably never going to go away, because that's, you know, that's one of the big power plays, isn't it? You can make people like, whatever awful thing you're doing becomes more tolerable if you can convince enough people that someone else is doing something worse.
Or somebody's below you. It's cult mentality.
Yes. It's the poor people's fault that you are not better off. It's not because all the rich people hoarding all the money. It's because of all the poor people on benefits.
Well, that was the whole thing. If you look at the village in the house, there was no other rich people living in the village. It was a poor village surrounded by a ginormous, huge castle. There wasn't any, like in the first movie, when she went to the christening, there was rich and poor mixing together, like the higher class and lower class. In this film, everybody that wasn't in the castle was poor. They were the peasants who surrounded the castle. So that was the whole thing. It's like what you get now with people about immigration and stuff. It is a really clever movie way of doing it. Even like the gas chamber, to not kill the ferrets, but to make them lifeless objects, make them a corpse. Because that's still very dark. And that's what
the director was. It was really well played. And because obviously you can't just gas a bunch of characters and kill them in a Disney movie.
Because
a family
in these
movie.
Movies, when they kill these kind of mystical creatures, they just evaporate.
Yes.
They don't exist. But in this movie, they weren't evaporating. They were becoming corpses of themselves. They were becoming lifeless objects.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, when that big tree turned into a tree and you saw it was really impactful, actually, because what you saw is the flowers and the blooms coming out on the tree, which normally is a beautiful thing because it's new life. Yeah. And then you go, oh, but that's not what that means in this bit. This means something very different. This means that character is gone.
Yeah, it's a corpse.
It was really powerful.
It was really good.
Yeah. So that's something that I like about the movie, but to say, I don't mean it in like a, oh, it was so lovely. I mean, it was like a really powerful thing in a movie.
Claire, how many spindles would you give Maleficent, the Mistress of Evil?
Well, here's the thing. So I agree with you. I prefer this movie to Maleficent.
Yeah.
I like Maleficent for the nostalgia factor. I like the alternative telling of a movie that I really love. But like I've been through, there are a lot of issues I have with it. A lot of those issues are addressed in this movie. And so I prefer it. And I think narratively, I think I prefer this movie as well. That said, it's an entirely unnecessary sequel.
Yeah.
And part of me thinks, I wonders if one of the reasons that it didn't do so well is that it's completely unnecessary. It's the first movie ended where it should have ended. There was a nice little bow. The only thing that was missing was the wedding. And that's because Disney don't do that anymore. They don't introduce the prince to the princess mid-movie and by the end they're married, because that's not a thing. But other than that, Pete, being missing, it basically took us to the end of the Sleeping Beauty story. We knew what was coming. And so in order to continue the story, you have to undermine. It's this Sex and the City thing, isn't it? The reason that I don't like the Sex and the City movies, and the reason a lot of people don't like the Sex and the City movies, is that the series ended with all of their characters in the perfect situation. And the only way to continue to tell that story is to break some of that.
And actually,
they didn't particularly do that in this movie, which I found quite interesting. But they didn't tell us that they weren't doing that. And with the title, like Maleficent, Mistress of Evil, people are going to think, well, then, you know, the character that all the character progression that she made of becoming more compassionate, of becoming a quote unquote nicer person by the end of that movie is going to get undone if she's going to become the Mistress of Evil. And obviously, now that we've seen the movie, we know that it's not her that's the Mistress of Evil. It's Michelle Pfeiffer's character. But that's not clear. It goes back to what you were saying about the marketing. So I've done an awful lot of talking, and actually what you wanted from me was a number, wasn't it?
Yes, that was all I was looking for, Claire. It's okay.
So I'm going to score it 3.5 out of 5.
Okay.
For all of the reasons. I like the movie. I don't think it needs to exist. I think it's...
But what do you give the original?
It's a bit of a... a Maleficent?
Yes.
Probably a 3 or a 2.5, depending on how grumpy I am in that moment about the feminist aspects of it.
Okay, that's fine. You love being on a fence. It's fine.
But the original animated movie, I would probably give a 4, even though there's loads wrong with it, just because it came... I think I was probably about 9 or 10. And it's one of my favourite Disney movies still. Yeah.
It didn't come out then. It came out before you were born, but you mean...
No, it came out of the vault.
Came out of the vault.
It got a VHS release.
I
don't think it got a cinema. No. I don't think it had a cinema release, but it came out of the vault and onto VHS.
Yes.
When I was probably about 8 or 9 or 10, which is key kind of Disney princess age, I suppose, for those sorts of stories. Maleficent has been my hands down favourite Disney villain from that day to this day, completely unwavering. And I love this version of Maleficent, but she's not... Hashtag not my Maleficent.
Yes.
I think.
Okay.
How about you? What's your score?
Well, I appreciate the sequel a lot more than the original movie. I think they expanded the characters in a great way. I think the title, like you said, is very misleading. And I think Angelina Jolie has really fitted into the role. And I think the world is expanded around her. And I really like her as Maleficent. I do enjoy her. I do kind of like sidestep a little bit compared to the original animated version. I don't really see them in the same league now. I just see them as two separate entities.
Yeah.
Taking that all into consideration, I really love the sequel, probably because I was disappointed in the first one when I first saw it, that I would give it 4 out of 5, 4 spinning wheels, spindles, whatever you want to call them. I say it's pretty perfect. Just some of the cinematography was very uncomfortable to watch. And if they corrected that, I think it would be a high, even like 4.5 for me. Like, I don't think it's a perfect movie, but it's a really good afternoon of fun. Or not actually a good evening of fun, because you have to watch it at nighttime because it's so fucking dark half the time.
Only if you're as old as us. Young people probably have no... Maybe it's like that... I don't know if you have them in America. There are some shops in the UK started having like a really high-pitched sound outside the shop that only young people can hear, that it stops the kids from loitering outside the shop. And it's a high enough frequency. It's a bit like how dogs can only hear certain frequencies. Children and young people can only hear certain frequencies, and old people like us can't hear them. So the shops start playing this like really high-pitched frequency to stop kids from just loitering outside the shop causing trouble, but it doesn't bother us oldies. Maybe this movie's like that.
Do you know what the British government should do?
Is it a frequency that only young people can see?
What the British government should do, so they're getting the kids not to loiter outside shops, maybe invest some money in some youth groups and after-school activities for the poor kids.
Oh, yeah, it's true. It's absolutely true.
They were around when I was younger.
That's not this podcast.
No. So I would give it 4 out of 5.
Four.
I would give it. I really enjoyed it. But can I just do a massive shout out to Disney and Disney Plus? Anybody from Disney Plus is watching this. Please, instead of keep giving us the same old Marvel and Star Wars live action TV shows, could we get a live-action TV show with Angelina Jolie's Maleficent, Melissa McCarthy's Ursula, and Glenn Close, Cruella de Vil, as kind of like the over trilogy? Like the three of them, just kind of like Glenn Close starts mixing with magic, starts working with different universes, and brings in Angelina Jolie and Ursula and Maleficent into the same world, and they have this world battle. I want to watch that. I'm bored of Star Wars and Marvel. Can we get something on a TV scale? I think that would be great fun. Would you watch that?
I think that's not going to happen. I would. No. I would. I think lots of people would, but I don't think Disney will pay for it.
No, I don't think they would either. Bastards.
Not when they can make a new Star Wars property that's dirt cheap because there's only one person from the original story in it.
I'm so
make up
over
a whole
them.
Bunch of new characters and call it part of the world.
I'm so over it. I'm anyway. Over Star Wars and Marvel TV shows.
So that's Maleficent, Mistress of Evil for you. Listeners, please take a moment to rate us and don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any new episodes. And tell us what you thought of the movie. You can leave us a comment. You can email us on unlovedsequels@gmail.com and you'll find us on all the socials at @unlovedsequels.
So it's goodbye from me, Michael.
And me, Claire.
Take care, guys. Bye.